So an interesting way to start the show today, Pam, at Sexy Marriage Radio. Welcome to Sexy Marriage Radio, by the way. That, you know, we're in the middle of tax season, and one of the things you talk about is you'll have clients that come in with TikTok tax advice that they've got.
Yes.
They've come across.
But at least they're coming to me to ask about it now.
And get not clarification.
Just use it.
That's good. Yeah. So I thought it would be fun to let's do a counter episode to the idea of TikTok tax advice and do TikTok marriage advice.
Okay, that's fantastic.
Of things. Another way to think of it, because this is the way I think of this, is cringeworthy advice.
Yes.
That you think will help marriage. Or another way you could think about it, because I'm a big Kate Bowler fan. She wrote that book, Everything Happens for a Reason, and Other Lies I Really Want to Believe Are True.
Yes.
Great read, by the way, if for those that are in the audience that are readers. But the idea of these are some of the advice that we've come across over the years that some of them I want to be true.
But they're just not.
Right.
Okay. And I'm interested to hear what you've got here.
Well, and the reason I want them to be true is because it would just make marriage easier. It seems like if it actually worked out the way the pithy statements can be, it would just make everything so much easier.
Yeah, life's more complicated.
Which I don't know if I'd really want that in the long run, as far as would we really want it easier, because part of the conflict and the problem is what makes life so meaningful.
Well, and that's what we don't realize, or we forget, is we grow and become better through these hard times, but it's hard to go through the hard times, so it's just exhausting. So I don't want that all the time. Can I just have some time when I'm not growing?
Fair.
Can I, please?
That is fair. And if you want time when you're not growing, please call us, 214-702-9565, or feedback at sexymarriageradio.com, because we want to know who else is on this bandwagon with us. But no, so this is just some cringe marriage advice that's out there. In some instances, kind of a little follow-up of an episode we did, episode 739, so back a year or so ago, where we talked about just marriage advice that just isn't helpful. Mm-hmm. So kind of building off of that same idea, but I went through and found several more. One of them is the obvious one of you complete me, that we talked about that last time, on just, it makes intimacy and a dependency kind of a thing. And so what we'll go through is we'll just walk through what some of these things we've come across, how they impact us, maybe some little snippets of what to do instead. But then in the extended content today, we'll go deeper into what do you do with some of the things that you really want to be true, but they're not. All right? What are ways to look at these? Let's go deeper into them on some of them. And so you can find more and join us at smr.fm/academy if you want to get into the deeper content that we'll be doing today. So let's go into it. One of them, this is one I hear so often. Happy wife equals happy life.
Oh, we didn't cover that on the last one?
I think it might have just been a snippet to it, but no. We did You Complete Me, 50-50 Proposition.
We did some of those.
We didn't do as many as we're going to do today, hopefully. But yeah, happy wife equals happy life.
Yeah. I don't like that one at all either.
Why not? Because this is one of those things that at face value, there's merit, maybe.
I don't even think there is at face value, because then that just means I hear it as the dude's just caving. He's not manning up.
That's how it's playing out. Absolutely.
It's the other spouse not manning up and saying, no, here's my take on it. Here's what I have to offer to this situation. And I hear it as the wife. It dumbs down the wife. I think it sounds like she's super immature. And
it dumbs down the wife, and it takes away the backbone of the husband.
Yeah. And that just is not an appealing relationship.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. But part of the reason why I can understand where this sentiment came from, because we're more pleasant to be around when we're in happy moods. And so if I keep people happy around me, it seems like life will be a lot more pleasant.
If I keep people happy around
which
me.
Which then this is where it becomes so problematic, because this trains appeasement. This trains avoiding conflict, and it makes one person's mood the thermostat of everything.
And how stressful is that to think I've got to alter everything I do and walk around on eggshells in hopes of keeping or making another person, quote unquote, happy?
And how complicated does that get? Because you get into these scenarios where there's nothing going wrong, but I'm just not happy in life because my moods just go off the charts sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, I wake up and I'm in a pissy mood and it's like, what went wrong? I don't know.
I had a bad dream.
I'm just off today. And now all of a sudden everybody's trying to appease that. It creates all kinds of disaster because this is also built off of the, if mama ain't happy, no one's happy.
Well, then you have that longer term thing of if you're doing everything to keep the other person happy, at what point are you just fed up with you're not getting any of the, you're not being appeased. Right. You're not being looked after.
Right.
You're not taking care of your own self. And so you're just fed up and say, I'm done. Right. I'm just worn out. We never get to do the things I enjoy doing.
Because eventually we will stand up. And usually if it gets too much of a ticking time bomb, our standing up is not real solid initially.
Oh my gosh.
It's totally reactive. So another one, and this is one that's popular in Christian circles, is never go to bed angry.
Oh gosh, we just talked about that.
At church.
At Reengage other night.
Sunday night at our marriage ministry. Absolutely. Because this is one of those things where the idea is because of a scripture. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Mm-hmm. Meaning we need to be right with each other and we need to address things before we can rest. And
we need to address
these things will fuel in us. But oftentimes the times where I have clients, I can pretty much count on the fact that the ones that are really, really volatile and really, really tense, most of the time, their fights happen late at night when we're in the worst position to actually deal with some of the major tension things. When you're tired, you're worn out, you're stressed, you just want to relax, you just want to go to sleep.
Or you need some time away from it. So the point is, don't be legalistic on the wording that says, don't let the sun go down on your anger.
Right.
Right. You can give things some time and then you can address it more clearly. You can come from at it from a rested spot at a spot that has a little bit of time gap in between the real emotional outburst that you may have had and a clearer mind that may be able to speak more. Well, less outraged, right? More level-headed in what you need to do.
When I get to the end of the day, my functioning oftentimes just isn't as good as it could be earlier in the day. It's just not going to be. I'm tired, overwhelmed, things didn't go right, whatever. And so it's realizing part of the reason this can be really problematic is it creates an urgency, which is another level of emotion attached to trying to deal with something else that already has tons of emotion associated with it.
Oh, we got to get this taken care of.
I can't go to sleep this way. I can't. It's like, well, maybe you can't, but it might be good to realize I need some space to get some perspective to then look at it through a different lens and then deal with it better. Mm-hmm. Because one of the truisms, I'll put this in here now. I knew this would come up at some point. But one of the things that's important to realize is when we're talking about marital dynamics, whatever level of the system it was at that created the dilemma in the marriage, wherever your level of functioning was as a couple that created the problems that we face in marriage, we will not solve them staying at that same level. I have to raise my level of functioning to be able to actually find solutions to deal with things.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because if I'm really immature and I'm dealing with something just as an example, and that's what creates the problem, until I become more mature, I will not solve said problem if I remain in the same level of immaturity, just as an example. So it's realizing I need rest and perspective was really what helps me. We'll grow up a lot of times and raise my level. So another one that comes, we've already talked about, is the happy wife, happy life. It's the same kind of concept of just make your spouse happy. Your job is to be your spouse's happiness committee, which that's kind of the same thing we've already talked about.
It really is, yeah.
And then another one, and this can go with a don't go to bed angry, always compromise. Because marriage is about compromise.
Always compromise. Right.
Well, the big one you'll hear is marriage is about compromise. Hmm. We've actually had some episodes on that of if you want, biggest passion killer there is in marriage.
Compromise.
If you think about it. But it's cringeworthy because it's this idea of it creates resentment most of the time because it's not true compromise. It's more actually what you talked about earlier with a happy wife, happy life. It's caving. Mm. It's just giving in. It's appeasement. And if you keep that as a thread, you know our human brains oftentimes are keeping a record of, I gave in on that. I gave in on that. And that's when I finally will. When do I get what I want? When do I actually get to talk about what it matters to me?
Would you say that there are times that compromise can work?
Compromise is a valid path forward when it is a truer choice that I am making to, okay, I'm not going to fight on this. I'm going to compromise on it and not hold you responsible for my choice of compromising.
Okay, but what you usually see is people that still hold the other person responsible.
I'm compromising because I just want the emotion to tamp down some and for us to be okay again. Mm-hmm. But we never really actually addressed the issue, though. We never really dealt with what's going on. And so, therefore, I'll have in the back of my mind a script of, well, you always get your way. You all blah, blah, and all these different things, which that's defeating to the relationship on growth paths, at least.
Which goes right back to your comment earlier about maturity.
Right. This is one we heard from, I was first introduced to this from my daughter, our 20-year-old, that if they wanted to, they would.
If they wanted to, they would.
Which is the idea of if they know what I want, they would want that. So it's this mind reading. It's built off of mind reading that if I knew adventure eating was a priority to you, I would want to do that. Is what that advice is. Or that thought is.
I hear you. So if I know, I think the phraseology threw me off because it doesn't sound right. So if I know my spouse wants something from what the 20-year-old is saying, if I know that the person I love, what I know what they want, then I will want to do it.
Yes.
Because they want to do it.
Yes.
And that is...
because I love them. Yeah. So therefore, I will want that. Just a natural inherent because of that. And that's where it starts to become a disconnect. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean there's not a valid motivation of how do I want for you what you want for you? Because that's a marker of growth. That I can grow to a level of I see what I want for you is actually what you want for you too.
Yeah.
But that's different than, you know, I love this. The example that comes to my mind is you are a higher desire adventurer, but you would want me to be the one to lead said adventures more so than you set them up.
That's true.
That's historically our
pattern.
As
erroneous as that thought process is, that's true.
All of desire talk is erroneous. And when you think about how the nuances, and this is why it trips us all up.
Yeah.
And why if this advice was true, it'd be a whole lot easier. Mm-hmm. but it's that idea of, I understand that's what you want, but it doesn't necessarily elicit in me a natural, oh yeah, I'll do that. And because it's not necessarily what I want. And there's the struggle that comes out to play. And so this is one of those that just, it creates, it's built off of mind reading and fusion completely.
And I forget, she saw that online somewhere.
I don't even remember. I just remember we were at a restaurant and she said, hey, Dad, because apparently she already talked to you about it because it was going around her circle of friends that are all engaged or
like in
seriously
her
dating.
Ministry group or something. I can't remember.
And she said, hey, Dad, I came across a phrase and I want to know what you think. And she told me and I just started laughing. And she's like, what? And I'm like, okay, how much time we got?
Right, exactly.
Kind of unpack this thing. And then on the same vein, this one's interesting. This is, we'll use he or she, depending on who you're talking about. Well, he's my person. This is my person. This is akin to probably in our upbringing, soulmate. I found my soulmate.
Oh, okay. Because I could go with "this is my person."
Mm-hmm.
That phraseology, I totally in step with. Because mm-hmm. it's just, I mean, you got people that are kind of your people, right? You're, and that's how I'm thinking of it is we're like-minded. Mm-hmm. We're.
But this is the up-to-date version, the way I think about it and see it at times, is this is my soulmate. I'm searching for my person.
Yeah,
I'm searching for my soulmate.
There's one person right. under the sun for you.
Right.
I think the only person under the sun for any of us was Jesus Christ. And
yep.
And he, you know, he was in human form, God in human form. But I really, it's so romantic to think you are the one.
Right.
You are my soulmate. You are the person that we are just, we're just meant to be together.
Right.
And
there will be no problems if they are my person. There won't be tension if they are my soulmate. There are, you know, and that's what it's all, that's where it becomes so problematic.
Mm.
Is there will be people that click differently and there's mm-hmm. a different energy between us. And that's a natural component.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't, we still need space between us. We still need...
There's still
our own
tension,
identity,
friction, yeah,
individuality and separateness, because that's what creates a more whole life rather than the you complete me, because this is built kind of on that.
Okay. So I thought your focus was more on it's just that one person versus if they're my soulmate, there's no conflict.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I think
gotcha.
Both of those work, and this is where it okay. becomes so problematic. But let's keep going, because this is a big one that's interesting.
Okay.
Is... You'll come across this phrase of communication is key.
Well, it is. And how you interpret the communication is key and how.
Yep.
So, I mean, communication is important.
But when you, here's where this becomes such a cringeworthy thing as I think about it, is communication oftentimes is thought of, it's what's spoken about.
Yeah.
It's what our conversations are about. And this is why a lot of times when there's a problematic area in marriage, one person typically, and if that one person that's the higher desire is the talker of the marriage, because most marriage has one that likes to talk more than the other person. That's going to be a natural thing of a marriage too. They will be the ones that can talk the thing to death because it's the higher desire priority to them, because the problem is we're just not communicating rather than, yeah, we are. It's not that you don't know.
Yeah.
It's not that you don't understand. You understand the message. You understand the tension. You understand the problem. But this is cringeworthy because it makes it seem like it's this whole talk until you agree with me, or talk until you soothe me, or talk until at least I know you understand me, when more talking doesn't help most of the time.
Well,
not initially when we're revved up and not functioning well, at least.
And,
put it
and
that way.
Talking doesn't always line up with actions.
Correct.
Right. So we are communicating. I mean, as we say all the time, we're communicating. We just don't like the message that's being sent.
Right.
And so if we can't get on the same page, then we think we're not communicating. Well, you are communicating, right. But let's look at what the meaning is behind what our spouse is saying.
Our brains are able and will immediately decipher between what's said and what's done, mm-hmm. and recognize there's an alignment with that or there's not. That's the proverbial. You hear your spouse constantly, hey, yeah, I'm going to start that this week. And then they don't. Yeah, this is the week. And then they don't. And then you get to where when you hear those words, your brain's like, okay, I don't have to believe a word you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's not necessarily a conscious thing. That's just a survival mechanism of mind mapping. That's last week's episode
mm-hmm.
with the mind mapping. But it's just realizing there's a dynamic at play here that communication is always happening. How do I face it better? And what am I actually communicating with the entirety of my life? That's how you start changing this little marriage advice to be a little more practical of make sure I'm communicating more clean. And
yeah.
Clear.
Yeah. Cleanly. Maybe I need to refine my technique a little bit. Maybe I'm bad at spitting out words. And I really am not saying what I want to be saying.
Right.
I mean, there's that in there, but there's a million things that can absolutely be tied into this whole communication topic.
When we get reactionary, what you could often hear is, if you love me, you would ... That's one of the phrases that's also kind of the same concept of my person. You complete me, that you would want this if I want this. But it's basically just control at that point. Well, if you love me, you would do this.
Mm.
Man, that's so, so defeating in the long run, because you're talking about compliance and control at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You're not talking about choice.
If you love them, you wouldn't demand this of them.
You know, they don't even realize. That's the whole thing, is a lot of these, if you think about it, what would you do if it's coming your way?
Yeah. Yeah.
On the same vein, when we get into the world of boundaries, right? A boundary is, you can't do whatever is problematic for me. That's the way oftentimes it can be interpreted, and even as proposed out there of people. I have a lot of times people, I do some conversations about, okay, let's define boundaries for a second, because they've got it backwards.
Mm-hmm.
That I told my spouse they cannot
XYZ
talk to that person. They cannot. It was like, wait. That's not a boundary. That's a request.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a boundary, because you can't control. You can't implement that.
The boundaries are for yourself.
Correct.
If my spouse does that,
then I will remove myself from the situation. If you continue yelling at me, I will exit the situation. That is a boundary.
Because that's something you can control.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's realizing, it's built on a premise that is really helpful for marriage, but it's got it backwards. Because boundary is not about controlling another person.
Mm-hmm.
It's about controlling yourself. Here's two that are interesting to me. Keep your spouse satisfied so that they don't stray.
Yeah.
This is from way
back. Again, you can't control someone else.
Correct.
And then you're putting the pressure on yourself to keep them from straying. And,
right.
Well, and what did I do wrong?
It makes fidelity a transaction.
Yeah.
And that's so problematic.
Yeah.
As if I could actually, that's the same kind of concept. If I could just keep you happy, you wouldn't be interested in anything else.
Right.
Like, really? It doesn't work that way. And then here's the other one that kind of is equally in this vein, from an old book. Men need respect and women need love.
Well, don't we both need both of those
exactly
things?
Exactly. It's a broad reduction of scripts. And it makes it to that, yes, you need both. Humans need both.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, this is that concept of, so all of a sudden I do really well of constantly showering you with love. That's still an element of, if I use the underbelly, undercurrent of that, that's a, how do I keep you happy? Because it's not actually truly giving love. It's not actually true in giving respect. Because the counter to this is, if I want to be respected,
I have to act respectable.
I need to be respectable. If I want to act, if I want love, I need to be lovable. And there's character traits of all of us that aren't lovable and aren't respectable. We'll just get that in the open, because we're all broken, fallen humans.
Yeah.
But the more I'm aware of, part of the way I get treated is what I've taught.
Mm.
And if I want to change this and challenge this, so it goes both directions in my marriage, I need to model it. I need to live it and give it. That's the struggle that happens. And then here's the last one that's interesting. Date nights save marriages. This has been popular the last couple of years, where there has been a campaign of date night, date night, date night, date night, date night, date night. And I'm being over dramatic a little bit with this to make the point, but
no,
yes, I am.
Well, I mean, they can be fun, and you do need to connect. So I think that's good, but is there one solution? Is that the one thing?
Well, it's an important factor. And this is one of those things where a lot of times you'll hear Just as an aside, I don't have this on the list, but just as an aside, you'll hear, well, you need to pray more. You need to just submit more. You need to just
be godly more.
And all of that is not wrong, but it's not enough too. There's more to it than I need to just pray, or I need to set up date nights, or I need to, there's more to it, because rituals don't create better selves. They create a foundation for the possibility of that work to happen, like a scaffolding maybe, but you still got to do the work, because it can't be, well, I took you on a date. Why are we not in a good spot?
Yeah.
Right. And so it's realizing I can set up a framework, but unless I take on me it within that framework, and this is where we'll head in the extended content, I'm not actually doing the work. I'm just trying to manipulate my environment. And that's not going to help anything. And then that's why all of this advice that's out there just falls flat on its face.
I think that phrase right there, if I'm just trying to manipulate my environment, let's get past that and let's get into the real dirty work where you're getting your hands dirty.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's coming up in the extended content. So join us on the other side. Segueing into the extended content, we'll just talk a little bit deeper into why a lot of times these pithy, I'm not even going to say well-meaning statements, trying to help, and this is the problem I've got. I'm going to soapbox real quick. Soapbox warning. This is a problem I've got with social media, among the many problems I've got with social media. But the biggest one I've got, when people will ask, how can I find Sexy Marriage Radio on Instagram or TikTok or whatever? And we're there, and we throw the episodes up there, but that's really about it, because our stuff is such long-form content. You can't get across the main idea in short snippets. You can give little bites, maybe.
Maybe we just don't have the right marketing person for that.
Maybe so, but it's also a lot deeper, because this is that same kind of concept I keep coming back to from a good friend. A guy's become a good friend that used to be he's in a mastermind group for a long time now. And he makes the comment, and he's in the mental health field too, and he'll tell his clients, listen to Sexy Marriage Radio, but you got to listen to about 8 or 10 episodes. Because, yeah, it's a show about sex, but it's really a show about life. And it takes a while before you really start kicking in on,
yeah,
that's what we're really talking about. And that's not going to translate in snippets.
No.
It can somewhat if they're in the right position. Like, oh, that makes so much sense, which we'll find people that find the nation via that route.
Yeah.
That's why I like YouTube more, because we can throw the full thing, the full show out there. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of content and all the stuff there. And so it's just, when you start looking at face value, what we want and strive for in marriage is not going to be addressed fully with snippets or one subtle, this will be it move.
Yeah.
Because then there'll be a move needed after that. And then a move needed after that, because that's how you started the episode of, can I just take a break of growing?
Yeah. And the answer is no.
No, we don't get to. Well, we can. But there's a price to pay for that.
Yeah, true.
There's impact to that. And the impact is the people I'm around.
Yeah.
And the people I care about. So if you start looking at just the different things we've talked about on realizing, like with the idea of don't go to bed angry, that, you know, one of the bigger issues of that is sleep deprivation. In our society is what fuels a lot of the chronic issues we face in our life. People don't get enough sleep. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got poked fun at. I still get poked fun at by our kids of, oh, dad's going to bed. Dad, it's 9:30. What are you still doing up?
You do go to bed early.
I love it.
And I'm starting to embrace it, because it feels wonderful to go to bed early. But
exactly.
It is early.
But I'm sorry if you're getting up at 6 a.m. because of a four-legged black lab almost every morning. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to get better sleep.
Yeah, we like to have a full, at least 8 hours.
If I can. And then the morning is so different when I've got good sleep. Mm-hmm. But and then you can just realize most of what we're facing in life can be solved with some of these changes overall with how I conduct me. Mm-hmm. because then I'm in a better position. Because the idea of trying to finish things, something before we go to sleep, when you're talking about marital tension, is I'm not in a position to actually see, like we mentioned in the regular show, regular part of the show. I won't find a solution when I'm at the level that it created. That created it.
The level of tension and anxiety that it created.
Well, yep. the level of my functioning, mm-hmm. whatever level I was at that created the tension, I'm not solving it at that level.
Yeah.
So if you go back to the regression talk in the trench, mm-hmm. if I'm 5 miles down and that's what created our problem, because that's where we both were, until I get up to about 4 or 3 miles down, we're not finding a solution. We're just going to perpetuate the problem. Mm-hmm. I might feel like it's a solution, but fundamentally it'll be the same dynamic. Mm-hmm. And so we're better to look at it as, okay, wait, I'm getting really reactive to this. I'm tired. I want to just table this. And if I feel like there's a tension, this is one of the things I remember. It just popped into my head from an old roommate in college that he and his now wife would have dust ups while they mm-hmm. were engaged senior year. And there's a lot of tension that goes on when you're in that stage of life with what's coming ahead and what you're scared about, don't know, and plus excitement. And he had several different times where they would have had a bad day. They were fighting about something and they had a goal of every single night they got together and prayed together, either if they were actually together mm-hmm. when he was dropping her off or a phone call. And he said, yeah, there's several different times where I'd be so upset about something, but we still want to pray with each other that we would still find a way to do that. Or it could be, I am not at a place I want to pray out loud, but I would love to hear you pray if you'd be willing to do it.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because then at least it shows we are aligned. We are in this. There's a commitment here. And problems we're facing are just problems we're facing. Because what happens when we get caught in these issues of we got to solve this, is it feels so perilous, because it's like there's a condition of if we don't, everything's broken, everything's wrong, we're doomed.
Yeah.
Rather than, no, there's things you're not going to solve. John Gottman talks about that's going to be about 63% of the things mm-hmm. in your marriage you're not going to solve. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're going to have to live with some levels of tension. That comes with the territory. And so looking at things like that is important. The idea of always compromise. I'm just going a little bit deeper and then we'll dive into the what do we do. It's the same kind of concept you mentioned several different times in the show of, man, what are the things that I might do if I followed this advice is actually just taking away my spine.
Yeah.
Taking my own integrity, if you will, my own character. Is dissolving some in this. And so when you can start to look at it as, okay, wait, did I really just give in or did I choose? It's not as important as I was once holding it.
And if I chose, what do I do with that?
Then right, I do it. Treat it as it wasn't as important as I was holding it.
Well, it's my decision. Mm-hmm. It's not a resentment toward the spouse. This is my decision.
Right. So what do you do instead? Okay. When you come across these different advices or pithy statements or mm-hmm. the things we've said, what do you do instead? And so the first one, and I love this concept. I use this almost every single day at some point with clients. Mm-hmm. Look at the self-respect test. Look at what's going on with that dynamic or that idea and look at it through a lens of self-respect. Will I respect my decision mm-hmm. after this is over? Mm-hmm. Like when this is done tomorrow, next week, will I respect what I decided? Will I respect how I handled myself?
Yeah.
Will I respect how I am facing the anxiety that's inherent in me with this issue rather than secretly, I'm hoping you'll help my anxiety go away. Right, and so that what's my next best self-respecting move is the phrase I use with clients a mm-hmm. lot. Mm-hmm. I used it twice yesterday.
Yeah.
With two different clients. Okay, so what's your next best self-respecting move here? Mm-hmm. Because that's how we earn self better. That's how we earn solidness. That's how we actually earn better capability mm-hmm. in life. Because we're not necessarily inherently born with it. everything we usually start out doing afraid to some degree. It's like
survival, right? That's what we're born with, the survival mode.
I speak up and I'm scared because I spoke up.
Mm-hmm.
But I learn, wait, I can do that.
I can speak up. Yeah.
Another way to look at this is kind of a fly on the wall technique of imagine you're out looking at the scene as a fly on the wall. And after a conflict went down, after some dust up went down in your marriage, look back at that scene and ask yourself, do an impact audit. What was the impact of all of that?
Mm.
The way I was doing this, and this is not about watching your spouse or your kid, because this can be used in any situation, a boss. If you look at you and how you interacted in a situation, what was the impact of it?
Mm.
How you positioned yourself, what was the impact of that?
Mm-hmm.
The way you, your tone, your volume, your mannerisms, what was the impact of that?
Well, and you're saying the impact to you, or are you saying the impact to those around you? Because I think of, I realized the impact was my kid was the equivalent of my tail putting my dog putting their tail between their legs and whimpering off, like, because I scared the crud out of them.
Right. And that usually has more tangible data than what was the impact on you?
Mm.
Because sometimes we're not aware enough to actually see this is hurting me because it's such an ingrained script that we'll have in our operating system that I can't quite see that yet. But I can get to where if I can look back, I've done this with clients in the past too, where, okay, look at that scene and let's use the kid as an example. There's something that just happened. How are you positioned? How are they? Okay, now stop. Look at their face. What do you see?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times the brain will remember these things, but we'll go past it real quick because we don't want to see that I'm crushing them.
Yeah.
It's scaring them to death. Yeah. It's whatever. And then it's this whole idea of, okay, what's the impact of that? What do you do with that impact?
Yeah.
That usually is a whole big avenue forward with a better power to really just figure out what do I want to do about me? And how I'm impacting people. Because if I don't want to be that person, now I can see it, that's who I am.
Mm.
And then another one is the idea of how can I hold a position without making it a war?
Yeah.
How can I just stand without having to advance, without having to prove a point, without having to be right?
And how do you do that?
Then oftentimes you're talking about you're aware of your tone. You're aware of the boundaries. You're aware of your over-explanations, your defensiveness. We can start to realize, wait a second. Okay, I added on so much there.
So how do I get something to just a clear, concise one or two sentences?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what it is. If I over-explain it, then I start to pull in maybe the biting comments.
And Dr. Glover, Robert Glover, uses the phrase, the two-sentence rule. That if I can't convey my stance in two sentences or less, I'm not ready to actually make the move yet.
Ah, interesting.
Because also then, this is contingent on my own self-respect and my own boundaries and aware of my own impact, is getting to a point where I can take a stance on something that I don't need permission to take the stance on it. Because it's of an important value of me. Mm-hmm. And it's totally within my purview of, I'm not going to be yelled at. So I will remove myself. No, you can't do that. I'm sorry. You don't get a vote on this, honey.
No, I
get to determine if I leave
don't even,
or not.
You don't even throw in that you don't get a vote on this.
I'm using it as part of our conversation.
Right. But that's where you go back to the same two sentences.
That's not modeling what I'm saying.
I'm not going to be. Exactly.
I'm not
going to be yelled at. I'm removing myself from the situation.
Right. And then the last one, and this is a little interesting, okay? The phraseology is what will trip up some people, but it's no rescue and no ransom. My job is not to rescue my spouse from their feelings and their overreactions and their disappointments and their frustrations and everything that's going on that fuels the situation. Because part of what will create problems in marriage is I don't like watching my spouse and their volatility or their fears or their frustrations or their hopes and dreams, whatever it might be. And it wigs me out deep down. And so I'll come in and try to rescue them. I'll try to soften a situation because I'm just trying to do it because I don't want the tension. Rather than, you know what, you're going to be upset about some things. I have to learn to settle myself down in close proximity to your feelings around something.
Right. So in a situation like this, I'm assuming it's more about conflicts between the two of you.
Yes.
It's not necessarily about, well, there's something really bad going on and I want to be there for my spouse.
Correct. Okay. Think of it this way. This might be the easier way to see an inroad into this. When you have a kid that is struggling with something that's of their own doing.
Yeah.
Because they just haven't had an ethic that's helped them excel in something, or they haven't put in the work with the instrument and now they're freaking out over the recital they've got going on. Or they didn't do
a grade because they haven't been studying.
Right. Or they didn't put the time on the practice field and now they're getting ready to go try out and they are wigging out. And what we would want to do as parents is rescue them from their fear rather than, you know what? Life's teaching them a really good lesson.
Yes.
I don't need to pile on and I don't need to be cold at all about this. But what we do is we will try to rescue because I don't like seeing people I care about struggle.
Yeah.
Rather than realizing it's that very struggle that creates the better relationship.
Yeah.
Because it's also happened simultaneously that if you're struggling, if you've got some feelings going on about something that's happening and I rescue them from you, like I ever actually could, but that's the motivation I could have.
I rescue them from me.
Right. That I'm trying to rescue you from your feelings. I'm trying to make it all okay. I'm over-functioning with an environment. Well, I'm also not dealing with my feelings of watching you with yours.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we both have opportunities to settle ourselves down to be alongside each other, to be allies with this? And then we get into our phrase we use in our household, and you've thrown it back in my face a couple of times, of we help those who ask for help rather than you step in and do it for them when you haven't been asked.
Yeah.
It's the same dynamic that's at play where I'm just trying to solve this. I'm just trying, but I'm not even aware that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because I'll keep talking. I'll keep hoping. I'll keep fixing. I'll keep whatever rather than, wait a second. How do I deal with, they're an adult. They have to learn how to deal with some of the stuff. And by them doing that, I have to do the same thing. That's how you actually create a greater marriage. Because it requires both of you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's that scenario of if you're trying to create something that has more passion and I'm doing everything I can to cultivate it in another person without just bringing a more passionate life, it's not going to work.
Yeah. Do what you love.
All I can do is live something that's more passionate. Mm-hmm. Again, Dr. Glover, create a great cake of life.
Mm-hmm.
And let the relationships be the icing on the cake. And too often we want the cake to be icing. Which, man, first couple bites, okay. After that,
yeah.
It's too much.
Yeah.
That's what becomes problematic, where I don't realize, I mean, this shouldn't be news to SMR Nation, particularly the Academy members, that there's a deeper thing going on here that's requiring more of us. And when I'm willing to move into it that way and start to differentiate, start to grow, start to evolve, there is something on the other side I have no idea what's coming that's actually so much more deep and profound because I've become a different person. That's what creates the greater marriages. So you may not be able to answer this since we just recorded the extended content too, but of the different advice we talked about in the regular version, is there any that you like where I thought I really believed that going into this thing? Because I believed the happy wife, happy life initially.
Really?
It wasn't talked about that.
Really? You believed that one?
I believed don't make Pam mad.
Well, I can see that because I scared the crap out of you when we first started.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
But
I wouldn't have been fun to live with. So it was like, dude.
But whatever. There was still the impetus of it all is if I could keep you happy and okay, then you might maintain a position of availability for me. That was the fuel that I had.
Oh, it was all about, yeah.
Uh-huh, because if you're mad, then we're not having sex.
Yeah.
And so there was a definite belief of, if I can keep you even keel or happy, there's greater likelihoods. So
yeah, well, I'm sorry for all that drama for you. I apologize.
That's good. But I'm curious, is there anything that you kind of look at and go, I kind of thought that might be
No,
true?
I'm the skeptical person, and I don't think that any just one broad brush statement really... It really brings home it. None of these, even if one of them was good in a situation, it's not a broad brush for everything.
True.
Right? Life is just too intricate, too complicated to have one statement.
And you touched on it at the beginning of your statement there. You are a skeptical person.
I am totally skeptical. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. No,
hey, it's all truth here as we're wrapping up the show. Well, this has been Sexy Marriage Radio. If we left something undone or the ones that stood out to you, we want to know. 214-702-9565, feedback at sexymarriageradio.com, or jump on the platform at nation.smr.fm. And let's start a dialogue of what are the ones that you wanted to believe were true and lo and behold found out they're not, or the ones that you may disagree with. Think, no, this is absolutely true. Let's have the conversation. So however you took a little bit of time out to spend with us, thanks. And we'll see you next time.